waiting for a long time, Shannon. So LeBron James has been vaccinated. He has confirmed.
Oh, I was losing sleep over that, Bob.
Well, I know you were.
one of the issues for LeBron is that he plays in the state of California, and they've maintained that if you're not vaccinated, you even as a player, you can't play. Wouldn't be able to play at Staples Center. So.
Well, yeah. Well, and let's be honest. I mean, that's why he got vaccinated. You know,
sure.
I don't understand why you wouldn't get vaccinated, but that's why he did. And it ain't no big deal. It's just that every time a high profile athlete gets a lot more attention if he's not vaccinated than if he is.
Yeah,
but
that's right.
That's the news.
Well, let's face it, with what we have seen, gosh, now for 14 or 15 months, with the role in particularly the United States in the Black Lives Matters system the George Floyd issue, LeBron James carries a lot of weight. And what LeBron James says and LeBron James does hopefully helps people get through these situations. And I mean, to me, for LeBron, I just made an assumption he was vaccinated. Hopefully that will allow and get enough people feeling more comfortable to be vaccinated. I mean, you know, here in Ontario, Bob, we're at 82% now.
Yeah.
82%.
Yeah. Well, the other 18% ought to be kicked out of the province. But having said that, I mean, I wonder whether I understand your position, but I wonder whether LeBron James in this kind of scenario can influence anybody. I just find it inexplicable that people wouldn't get vaccinated. And if you've held out this long, almost 2 years, mm-hmm. if you've held out this long, have you been waiting for LeBron James to say, I'm vaccinated, you should be? I don't know. I mean, they'll buy his sneakers. They'll pay attention to some of the things he says. I just think in this one, people are really stuck in the mud.
Well, it's, the circles of people I travel in, this isn't even a debate, Bob.
Of course it's not.
There was a point I think that I said, and that became actually, I walk my dogs two or three times a day and it became in the middle of the summer, it became part of the conversation is, have you got your first shot yet? Have you got your second shot yet? That became part of, rather than saying hello.
Oh no, you're right.
And because it was just a given that it would happen, in many ways, maybe it's our age, Bob. Maybe we understand that more. Maybe we've been through it. Maybe we've thought it through better, in thinking that you should be vaccinated, not just for yourself, but for your family and for everybody around you and everybody you have contact with.
Well, look, I'm not the kind of guy that runs to a doctor. I go if I absolutely have to. Otherwise, I avoid it. But this one, just to me, seemed to be a complete no-brainer. That at the very least, if I'm confronted by this disease, I'm in better shape to handle it. People are dying. And none of us want to be that guy.
No.
And if you think you're immune, you're not. And you're like a teenager who thinks that I'll never get it, so I don't have to worry about it. Well, I had two friends. They're casual friends. I did see them a couple times socially. I had no idea that they weren't vaccinated, but they weren't. They both got COVID. He spent a couple days in the hospital, and she spent a month.
Wow.
In the hospital and very nearly passed away. And as predicted, after they got it and went through what they went through, they got vaccinated.
They changed their mind.
It's a hell of a thing to have to go through in order to change your mind. Anyway,
let's hope that we can get from 80% to 90% sooner than later,
or 100%.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's possible. I don't think it's possible to get 100% of anything anymore. So.
Well, there are sports teams that are 100% vaccinated. The Toronto Raptors are, and maybe the Winnipeg Jets are. We're going to find that out. Kevin Cheveldayoff is the general manager of the Jets, and we'll talk about him and COVID and his hockey team and the fact that they're actually going to cross the border, play in front of fans, all kinds of new stuff.
You mean real hockey in real arenas with real people?
As far as I know, no more cardboard cutouts. Wonder what they did with all those cardboard cutouts. Maybe that's a question we should ask. Kevin Cheveldayoff, when we come back after these messages. McCowan and Shannon back with you, and the general manager of the Winnipeg Jets, Kevin Cheveldayoff, joins us. And, well, it's kind of hard to tell, Kevin, but you don't really have that much of a tan, although the weather apparently is great in Winnipeg. I guess at this time of year, you don't get outside much, huh?
No, it's, you know, pretty much, you know, in the rinks, which is a good thing to be at. And, you know, it was exciting the other day. We had our first home preseason game to essentially a full house. And it was great to have the fans back in the rink. And, you know, hockey season just around the corner.
Well, what was that? What was actually that thought of people in the seats and cheering for the Jets without any fake music or stuff like that? What was that like?
Well, I think for the guys, it was, it was a great moment because, you know, again, and the crowd was good. Generally, you know, preseason games sometimes can be sparse by their nature because, you know, especially early on when you're not dressing full teams, but, you know, it was a good atmosphere. It was a great building. And, you know, I think there was a general excitement level by everybody, you know, to be back in and cheering.
So yeah, speaking of that, we do know from history and certainly the games that I've watched, the preseason games that I've watched so far this year, that teams don't dress their full roster. That's understandable. But you do sprinkle in a few veterans here and there, maybe as many as half.
Yeah, you have to.
Well, is there a temptation to do more or less of that, Kevin?
Well, I think, you know, as it goes on, you speak to your veteran players and say, how are you feeling? Do you need, you know, what do you need to get out of this? Do you need another game? Don't you need another game? I think generally speaking, teams, you know, tend to, when you get towards the latter part of the preseason, you know, start playing more veterans. You know, we have about 40, I think 43 or 44 players in camp here right now. And you know, a couple of the junior players will start, you know, trickling back to junior hockey, you know, shortly. And then when the American League camp opens up, we'll pare down those numbers as well for some of the younger guys that are maybe going. And then, you know, it kind of ramps up to the end where the last, you know, two or three games, you might have your, you know, essentially your full team or maybe two or three guys that are battling for that position that, you know, is still kind of up in the air. So, you know, it's interesting because we didn't have any preseason last year at all. And some people say, well, you know, maybe you don't need any, but I do think it's still an essential part of evaluation for some of the younger players and seeing where they're at and evaluating your roster.
Well, speaking of that evaluation process, some of it is yours. Some of it is your coach, Paul Maurice's, but how much impact do you put on a player's performance during a game, as opposed to what you see in countless practices, workouts, skates, etc.?
Well, you know, again, you can do drills and you can do skill practices, but when you're competing against, you know, another team and another player, and you know, you have to, you know, the results are being tabulated and counted, you know, like wins and losses may not really mean much in the preseason, but, you know, there's still a score in a game and there's still, you know, breakdowns that happen. And there has to be teaching moments, you know, for whether it's younger players or veteran players. So again, I'm not a big proponent of having too many of them, but I do think that, you know, again, the evaluation process, certainly for, you know, young defensemen trying to, you know, cut their teeth and, you know, being able to go out there and gain some confidence and be able to make a mistake and still survive it and get a chance to play again the next game, I think it's important.
So you talked about battles. How many battles do you think are on your roster?
Well, I think we've got some, you know, on the bottom six side of things on the forward group, and we'll probably have a battle for the number seven spot on defense if you look at how things are constructed right now. But you're not just battling for your opening night roster. You're battling for that pecking order of call-ups, you know, from the American League as time goes on. You're battling for the coach's attention to say, this guy's really improved from last year, you know, and I think he's close. You know, so you're always, you know, battling for some level of attention, I guess, so to speak, whether it's for the immediate or for the future.
Is Harkins one of those guys?
Well, Hark's Hark's played you know, the parts of the last couple of seasons for us, and I, you know, we're looking for him to take that next step. Like, he's a younger player that you know, has grown, you know, his game a lot. Came in to, you know, hockey, pro hockey is more of a natural centerman, has played mostly on the wing for us. But you know, we're looking for him to, you know, to take a step. We lost guys, you know, to different organizations like Nate Thompson and Lewis, you know, who were mainstays for us last year on the fourth line. So we're looking for, you know, some of those younger players to take the bull by the horns, so to speak, and pick up where, you know, those guys maybe left off.
With Kevin Cheveldayoff of the Winnipeg Jets, when you watch a preseason game, I assume you watch it differently than you would a regular season game. Do you have a tendency to watch young players or players that are trying to make the roster a little more closely?
Yeah.
Is that your focus?
Yeah, you are interested, you know, maybe a little bit more in that. Like, some of the veteran players, they're looking to get the kinks out of their game. So, you know, you kind of know, you know, where they're at, the expectations maybe are a little bit different, you know, there. You're looking for, you know, to see how younger players handle. Like, you know, case in point, you know, the other night when Pierre-Luc Dubois took the cross check to the face and had to go for stitches, you know, all of a sudden we have a 5-minute power play. Well, you get Cole Perfetti out there now on the number one unit, and he gets a chance to, you know, to play those extra minutes, you know, because a guy like, you know, Dubois goes down. So those are the opportunities that you're looking to give the younger players. And again, Cole's a perfect example of a first round draft pick from 2 years ago, that this is his first training camp, never had the experience of the training camp last year. And fortunately, he was able to play for you know, the Moose in the American League and excelled there. But, you know, this is an exciting moment for him as well.
And I would assume you expect Perfetti to play some games for the big club this year, right?
You know, again, that'll be determined on a lot of different situations. But, you know, certainly the door's, you know, wide open, or the door's right there for him to kick down if he'd like. And we're excited. He's had a good, you know, camp so far. He played in the first game. I think he's going to end up playing in the next couple of games as well here. So he'll get a real good opportunity to get a feel for what the National League, you know, is about. Now, that being said, this is still preseason, and you know, it is the game does change dramatically, you know, when the lights come on, so to speak, for opening night.
You are going into a season where, once again, you'll be crossing the border on a regular basis, and you'll be doing so more than any other team, I think, in Canada, given the division that you're in. You have no other Canadian teams in your division. Right. Does that present any concerns, problems, given that COVID is still with us?
Well, there's some logistical things that we're, you know, going to obviously have to take care of, you know, being, you know, making sure that the testing schedules for, you know, for the traveling party are scheduled, you know, correctly, and that you get the results back in a time frame that allows you to not have to delay travel or anything like that. So those are things that you spend a lot of time with your team services people behind the scenes to make sure that all those things are taken care of. And you know, it was interesting. I, you know, my kids are both, you know, in school or working in the U.S. and I had a chance to go and visit them for the first time in over, I guess, 18 months. And I ended up going down seeing them, and it was bizarre for me because that was the first time in, you know, in that period of time that I had been in the U.S. So it was weird. It was a different feeling. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the guys, you know, do take, you know, to the road and what, you know, what their level of ease will be to, you know, to kind of maybe branch out and go to a restaurant or not. I don't know. You know, we spent the whole entire year last year, obviously, you know, in the hotels, in our own sort of bubble, so to speak, And you know, there were some interesting things that came of it. You know, you got a lot. You got to know some of the people maybe a little bit better and stuff like that in some regards. But in some regards, you know, you still miss that ability to to bond as a team. So it'll be interesting to see how it does play out with the cross border travel.
Are you suggesting that it might even change some routines and philosophy when you're on the road?
It'll be interesting to see. I think some different places you're going to go to, you're going to feel, maybe a little more hesitancy than others. At least I guess I can only speak for myself is that, you know, there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve to see what that new normal, is going to be like. And there were some routines, I think, that players got into, because of last year, that might be hard for them to shake, because in some ways there was, again, a lot of different things that you had to do, and it became natural.
And now do you have to, when you set up a player's lounge, like that was part of the whole, are you going to have to do that again, Kevin?
So, it's not part of the protocol, but it might not be a bad idea, like it might be something that, that does make sense. Whereas obviously, we're fully vaccinated. So the team can move around a little bit differently than they could even, in that bubble scenario last year. But, maybe that is not a bad idea, to provide something for the guys to, not have to venture out.
So you mentioned your team is fully vaccinated. Have you thought about what you would have done if one or two of the members of your team or more had not been vaccinated, how you would have dealt with that?
Well, given what you just mentioned before, that we're probably a team or the team that's going to cross the border the most, I think that we would have been impacted,
sure,
quite heavily by that. So fortunately, I didn't have to get into that scenario, but it is something that could have been very real had the fortunes of our team, if we didn't have a vaccinated player.
Yeah.
Did you have to talk any of your players into getting vaccinated, or were they all voluntarily there?
Yeah, it's a personal decision. So there really wasn't any talking, into. I think, I think anybody that had some hesitancy for valid reasons, whether it was, health or family or what. But, fortunately, again, our group did. And fortunately for, I guess, our province is our vaccination rates for our province, are in general, on the good side.
But we haven't had a chance to reflect on how your season ended last year at all. Have you been able to find a way to explain how you sweep the Edmonton Oilers in four and then lose to Montreal? You did.
That's hockey, baby. You don't get to predict, you don't get to prognosticate, doesn't matter what's on paper, you've got to go out and play, and there's certain elements that you can't control, even as a player, that's the game. And that's why you should never, ever take any aspect of the game for granted, because it's won and lost. And that's what makes, the Stanley Cup playoffs such an intriguing aspect of hockey and sports in general. And that's why they say that, a lot of people say, I shouldn't say everyone says, but to win the Stanley Cup might be the hardest championship in pro sports to win.
Well, logic would suggest that you climbed the mountain in beating Edmonton to some extent and did it so convincingly. And then Montreal comes in off a 7-game series. Was there any sense in your mind that your club might have relaxed, been a little overconfident?
Well, I don't know that it was so much, that. I think that, there was an element of rust. I do know, in the time frame that we were getting ready, we got ready to play Toronto 3 times. And
yeah.
And mentally, you had to condition yourself of, okay, the series is going to start Wednesday. The series is going to start Friday. The series is going to start Monday. So you had those kind of peaks and where you're getting ready to ramp up your emotions. And then obviously in the last one, or even maybe in the last two, you're starting to prepare for both, Montreal and Toronto. But the unfortunate side for us is we ended up ending the Edmonton series healthier than we did starting the Montreal series with a player like Paul Stastny, having some back spasms that kept him out of action. So that was an unfortunate thing that, again, just part of the game of hockey.
The other interesting thing is that you have had a bit of a turnover this year, and you mentioned that your veteran guys like Lewis and Thompson aren't there. How do you replace that veteran leadership?
Well, I think we brought in some fantastic veterans in Dylan and Schmidt, so the we brought in some guys that, are not only veteran, they're impact veterans higher up in the lineup. So, and everybody's 1 year older and everyone's got one more year of experience, Nikolai Ehlers, Kyle Connor, Jansen Harkins, Josh Morrissey, all those guys, they went through that, the heartache of what we had to go through, last year. And we had some great guys too on the taxi squad that, again, never really got the opportunity that they probably, should have. And then we got some younger players that are, coming into their own developmentally, like David Gustafson. And so, again, as an organization, you do need to inject some fresh blood in there as well. I think we addressed our experience that we lost and then some with guys higher up in the lineup.
When your team was what came back to Winnipeg, there was a lot of talk about the ability of the franchise to lure, for lack of a better word, free agents to Winnipeg, and would the guys that were moving there be altogether happy? Is it fair to say that you have now erased that, and especially with the two guys that you signed this year?
So I don't know that you'll ever, erase, that there's always going to be no trades. As long as the no trades are allowed in contracts, there's going to be teams that, whether it's, again, we do contracts as well here and give players that sign with us no trades, and they put a list of teams together. I couldn't tell you why they do or what their motivations are. And when you get their list back, you look at it and you wonder, okay, well, why doesn't he want to go to, the New York area? Or why doesn't he want to go to California? Or why? So, again, every player that earns their right has that perspective to do. But one thing I think that, what we've had to do or what we have done is worked hard to have a team that players want to play for, because they, ultimately what players want is a chance to win. So as an organization, Mark Chipman, as the managing, partner of between him and David Thompson, the mantra and the mandate that they said from the beginning is that, we want this team to be a source of pride for Winnipeg, and we want to treat the players as well as any other team in the National Hockey League and more. So we've been able to do that, and we've had opportunities where, guys like Blake Wheeler could have left, twice or three times, when Dustin Byfuglien had choices to go sign as a free agent somewhere else, he chose to stay. So, if you've ever been to Winnipeg and experienced, living here, it's not hard to sell Winnipeg as a community and what it is like to raise a family. And that's why we've had success, I think, too, with drafting players and keeping them, because once you get here, you realize, just what a great, great market it is.
And your fan base deserves some credit for making your arena one of the greatest advantages in the National Hockey League.
It is. It's tough. And even the guys, once they get here, you talk about that and they say, geez, it was always so hard. Like, the fans are right on top of you. It's a unique building. Like, it's like a smaller footprint than every other building in the National Hockey League, but yet it still has a lot of the new amenities but you do get that experience of the fans being right on top of you.
Kevin Cheveldayoff is with us, the general manager of the Winnipeg Jets. Take a quick break and come back with more after these messages. Bob McCown, John Shannon with you, and Kevin Cheveldayoff, the GM of the Winnipeg Jets, is with us. A little less about your team for a second, and a little bit about some things that are going on. crackdown on cross-checking is a big issue this year. And there seems to be, there's always something, I guess, that the game and the league are focused on. Did this need addressing, in your opinion?
Well, I do think there's some egregious situations that, you know, that did happen that, you know, didn't get called. And, you know, sometimes that leads to, a heightened awareness of it. And then sometimes it leads to discussions. And in some cases, you know, it leads to heightened awareness. Now, obviously, the rule really hasn't been changed. It's just more of an emphasis, you know, that's put on it from an interpretation standpoint. A lot of times what will happen is the league will, you know, come to our general managers meetings with, you know, a handful of clips, you know, that of events that have happened in the games over the course of time. And they'll say, you know, yay or nay, penalty or not. And it's interesting. Sometimes those votes are very, you know, heavily weighted one way or another. Sometimes they're split down the middle. And when the votes start to get heavily weighed one way than the other, then they take a look at, you know, well, should we, you know, is the standard where it needs to be? And it got to the point, I think, where there was, you know, some areas of cross-checking that needed to be addressed. Now, like anything, the pendulum's going to swing one way and, you know, could lead to something, you know, going the other way. And the law of unintended consequences is always something that we talk about in our GM meetings, that, you know, be careful because you know, one action will affect another. So we'll see how it all plays out.
Did you think it was problematic?
Well, again, there are some areas that, you know, again, you want the skilled players to be able to, you know, to play. The stick sure. is, you know, is to be used in a certain manner. You know, when it does start to get out of the way, I do think you need to bring it back in. Now, that being said, I'm just glad I'm not playing, because when they took the can opener out of the game, that was my strike number one. And if I couldn't have cross-checked when I played, then, you know, my career would even have been shorter than it was.
You beat me to it, Kevin. I mean, this is the one thing we got to watch is that at a certain point, you don't, at least this is my personal opinion, I don't think you want to take the physical nature out of the game, do you?
No, well, physical nature, no. And I think, you know, you want... You know, you want to be able to, you know, and as a defenseman, you're sensitive to it. You still want to be able to clean the crease. You still want to be able to, you know, box out guys. And I do think that, you know, you still, you know, will be able to push guys, you know, in that manner. It's just a matter of, you know, the ones that when you're reefing against a guy, you know, whether, you know, hitting a guy in the back when the defenseman's taking a slap shot, you know, like, that could lead to something pretty serious if, you know, if a forward loses his balance and can't protect himself or watch a puck come and hit him. So those are things that, you know, I think you have to still, you know, be very cautious of and as a league, we need to be cognizant of.
Is there anything else that you think needs addressing? I mean, hooking's been addressed, holding has been addressed, interference has been addressed. Now cross-checking has been addressed. Certainly hits to the head have been addressed. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a cycle, isn't it? Of you go through several seasons and you see what guys are doing. And if they don't do one thing, they're going to lean to something else. Is there anything else?
Well, so that's what I guess I was getting to with the law of unintended consequences. You don't know what this might lead to, because you
right.
know, guys are going to find a way of something or another. But one thing, you know, again, I think the game is in a great spot, though. Like I'm not looking to over police it. But I do think it's, you know, it's in a great spot. It's as fast as it's ever been. You know, it's exciting, I think, from a perspective of a person that can actually sit in the stands now and watch, because again, to me, that's the essence of the game is beautiful when you get it to sit in the stands and watch it all unfold in front of you. So, can't sit here and say there's one particular thing that I would, you know, again, put on the agenda for the next GM meetings, but we're only getting started.
Hey, how much, you know, the fact that you were moving from the Canadian division, you're going central. So you're going from east, west to north, south, which makes your travel, it might make it a little easier time zone wise, but it's probably still the same amount of distance. Did when you and Mark and everybody else in the office sat down and talked in the summer, was there any thought that you kind of enjoyed the Canadian system more than the central?
Well, I do know that you know, Mark was very open about it. You know, he really enjoyed having the, you know, the Eastern Canadian teams coming into the building, like obviously the original Sixes and stuff like that from Canada, and you know, those battles that that we had with the Oilers, you know, back in Jets 1.0. I think fans, you know, really you know, appreciated those kind of you know, things back in the Smythe Division battles. But you know, at the end of the day, it worked okay because we played those maybe two or three game sets in a city, and then you could go and, you know, reestablish yourself in the time zone. But crisscrossing back and forth through the time zones is hard on a player. It really is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we do though have a couple of trips this year where we, you know, we start on the, you know, start on the West Coast and come back home and play a game and then go to the East Coast. And so you have those scheduling anomalies where, you know, last year, you know, in some ways people have asked, they said, well, you know, would you want to go back to those two games or three game sets in the city to get it out of the way? And in some ways you would, but I don't know, you know, we were able to do that last year because there was nothing else scheduled in all these buildings. And hopefully, you know, all these buildings do get back to the concerts and stuff like that, that, you know, the entertainment world is looking for.
Is that a classic case? You prefer that, you know, on the road, and you wouldn't want it at home?
Well, I think from a ticket selling standpoint, you know, the ticket people would tell you they like to have the variety of people in. From a hockey standpoint, I think the players would say they like the, you know, the ability to not have to pick up after a game and go and play in another city. So, but again, it's and then, you know, there's a handful of guys that I've talked to said they're really excited about playing all the teams again, because mm-hmm. That's what they like. They like to measure themselves against everybody, you know, or, you know, and go to different cities and experience, you know, the different arenas.
Well, I think Shannon will attest to this. When last season ended, I made the personal point of saying that I kind of liked it. I liked a lot of the elements of the Canadian division. I liked the fact that you didn't always have to travel right after the game. I liked a two-game series where a team comes in and you play them twice. I like that concept. It's almost like playoff hockey, even in January or November. There are a lot of factors about this that I really liked. And yet almost none of the hockey pucks that follow this game and are involved in this game, they all hated it. They all told me I was crazy. But I don't know. There were some things in there that I kind of liked as a GM. Were there things in there that I guess you've already said there were parts of this that you thought were okay?
Yeah, there was. There's no question about it. And we as general managers actually had some conversation about this prior to COVID, actually, as a way to lessen the fatigue on the bodies of the players and stuff like that. And but invariably, what did start coming up when we started to go down, you know, those conversations was building availability and stuff like that, and being able.
Yeah, I get it. To,
but you know what? The interesting thing for me that was really, it was different last year. It felt like you were in your own league though. So like you really had to pay attention to the other leagues to, you know, you fell out of touch with the other teams, you know, like.
Oh, I get it.
You really, you know, focused in on, okay, what's going on in Vancouver tonight and all, you know, as opposed to, you know, hey, you know, what's going on with, you know, Nashville or Dallas, or, you know, like it didn't matter as much in your own mind because you were so hyper-focused on your Canadian division versus.
Although the difference, of course, would be if you had a Canadian division this year, you would still play games outside your division, which you didn't, you didn't do last year. Yeah. So you'd have, I don't know how many games against the other teams, and you'd still do traveling. You'd still do it across the border. So that would have been kind of the balance act, I think, of what you missed last year.
But the hardest part for the Jets, and Kevin, you correct me if I'm wrong, is that when you talk about your rivals, when you talk about the teams that fans in Winnipeg love to hate, none of them are in your division. So how do you manage that? I mean, you had a playoff series against them. I'd love to see the Minnesota Winnipeg rivalry grow.
Right.
But, you know, your biggest rivals are Edmonton, Toronto, Montreal. And so that becomes a real I mean, if I'm a Jets fan, I'm saying I want to see those three teams more. Yeah.
Well, and that goes back to, you know, what I said. I think Mark Chipman was pretty, you know, pretty vocal about that he liked that. But the flip side of it is you know, it goes back to John's, you know, question there about travel. And, you know, the interesting thing is when we sit down with the schedule maker, one of their biggest challenges is our location. Like, we are dead smack in the middle.
Yeah.
There's no one else, you know, that is a geographical twin is what the words that they use in the scheduling side of it. You know, you've got, you know, Edmonton, Calgary. Well, invariably someone's always coming in and playing Edmonton and Calgary, and someone, you know, is probably going to get, you know, whether it's Edmonton or Calgary, you're going to get that team tired, you know, after playing the night before in one of the other cities. You got that same phenomenon in Florida. You got the same phenomenon in LA and California is there, where, you know, they you go there, you play two games. Well, you come to Winnipeg, you know, the team's got to fly from somewhere and then go somewhere else, whether it's changing a time zone, crossing a border, like Minnesota's our closest rival from that standpoint, but you got to cross the border, which, you know, is difficult for some teams at the best of times. Now we're going to have to learn what that means, you know, in COVID, but think about it. So a team comes up from the U.S. comes to play us in Canada. They need a COVID test, you know, to by a certain period of time before they can come in. Now, where's their next game going to be? Is it back in the U.S.? Do they need to take another test? Have they tested out already, you know, to go back into the U.S. From that? So those are all the logistical things that, you know, that our staffs are going to have to make sure of.
Well, and I'm gathering that they have enough information now that there's been enough international air traffic to get a sense that it takes longer. At least it takes longer for Joe Normal. And I would assume it will take longer for you as a team and even doing the prep, because there's more security, more things to go through. And that's going to add to your travel time, which is going to make your guys a little ornery, more ornery by the time midseason comes along. Forget about the end of the year, huh?
Well, it'll be interesting in a season where, you know, we will have an Olympic break, and you've got that. So there's a lot of new things that we haven't had for a couple of years.
Hey, just to ask you about a couple guys. You mentioned that Dubois got clipped the other night with on the chin, but he'll be okay. What's your expectation for him this year?
You know, again, I think it his movement last year from Columbus to here, going through the quarantine and then coming and playing a game and then getting injured and essentially being out for another couple of weeks after that. And then, you know, coming to a team and not really ever, you know, being a part of anything. You know, there was no, you know, it wasn't team dinners. There wasn't socializing. There wasn't, you know, trying to acclimate yourself. Like, you know, there was no... you know, going to each other's rooms, playing cards, you know, those kind of things that, you know, guys did, you know, you couldn't do that last year. So it was a tough year on and off the ice, I think, for a lot of players, you know, that did move. And, you know, for a young player like him going through that for the first time, getting injured really for the first time, you know, it was a tough year, but he's coming to camp here. He's in, you know, in great shape. You know, he obviously we've only had the one game there, but he looked good in it. And, I'm expecting a real good things from him.
Somebody else you wanted to mention, Shannon? You mentioned
just the two defensemen. It's funny, you've acquired two guys in Dillon and Schmidt. Dillon played really well when he was in San Jose against the Jets in a playoff series, and Schmidt played great in Vegas when he played against you. How much of that, those kind of things were factors when you said we can improve our blue line with those guys?
Well, it's all about opportunity too. You know, like we were hoping that Brendan Dillon would get the free agency a couple of years ago. You know, after, you know, when his contract was ending with Washington, and hoping we'd get a chance at taking a swing at him. But obviously, you know, he had signed. And, you know, we sat down as things started to unfold for the expansion draft and everything like that, and looked at everyone's situation and wondered what they were going to do. Washington obviously looked at their cap and saw that there may be a chance. And then when we saw that, you know, he was left exposed in the expansion draft, you know, we got on the horn right away and tried to see if there was a way of maybe acquiring him, you know, if it was through Seattle or if Washington maybe wanted to move him, you know, and they really didn't, but you know, again, I think their salary cap, you know, forced their hand. So we were excited, you know, to acquire him. And all through that time, you know, we started talking to, you know, Vancouver about, you know, Nate Schmidt, and knowing that, again, the crunch that they were going to have to face as well. So it was an interesting timing thing, and we were very fortunate that you know, we could find a way to get the cap space, because if you think about it, at that time we still didn't have Pionk signed and we still didn't have Kopp signed. So right. you've got placeholders in there, you've got projections, you want to try to do some things to make sure you can shore your team up. And you know, Larry Simmons, who handles, you know, the cap for us and contracts, just did an outstanding job of shoehorning, you know, all those kind of things in. And, you know, for our team, and it was kind of, I think it's what we needed. You know, we lost Dustin Byfuglien a couple of years ago. You know, here's a guy that, you know, 6'4", 260, can go into a scrum and, you know, and pull two guys out. But yet in the dressing room, he's a, you know, kind of the class clown type thing, and you know, got guys loose. Well, you know, we've got in Dylan, we've got that physical guy, I think, that can really, you know, give us that element. And then Nate Schmidt, like, he's just his energy is just infectious, and he's only been here for, you know, a little bit, but, you know, like, he's there's just always a smile on his face and a laugh, and he's just an awesome guy to be around. So you know, we're excited. I think they'll both fit in chemistry wise, and you know, play-wise, hopefully they're what we needed.
And how difficult was it to, I mean, the guy, you've always been really strong at drafting and developing. How difficult was it to let Sammy Niku go?
Well, you know, again, Sammy, there's been a lot of, you know, different situations and circumstances that have, you know, worked in his favor and sometimes against him as well. So, you know, it's tough. You can't, you know, sometimes players have to earn their way, you know, into, you know, those right situations. You know, at the National League level, it's about winning. And when you get an opportunity to get, you know, two young defensemen or two new defensemen, like, you know, like the veteran guys that we got,
right.
You know, it's all about, you know, trying to win. And this group here, I think, appreciates that. And we've got some good young defensemen coming here in Ville Heinola and Dylan Sandberg. And, you know, we've actually had some, you know, really good guys in camp here that, you know, are getting some, you know, some exhibition games, you know, right now. Johnny Kovacevic is a player that played for the Moose for the last 2 years. He looked really good in game one of the preseason game here. He's going to get another one coming up. So those are the things that organizations just keep on evolving.
We're always appreciative, as you know, of the opportunity that we have to chat with you. We appreciate the time that you commit to us on occasion, and especially today, where it's 28 degrees and summer-like at the end of September in Winnipeg. Now, I know you wouldn't have been on the golf course anyway. You got work to do. It's hockey season now, but nonetheless. Yeah. You're inside chatting with us, and we're most appreciative.
Yeah, but we would have been on the golf course, Bob.
We would have been.
I wouldn't have been on the game of on the golf course, because, you know, the game of golf wouldn't allow me to do that.
Oh, we all have days like that, I can assure you, whether you play or not. Kevin, good to see you. We wish you the best of luck this year, and you know, as close to a normal season, we hope, as can be expected. Good luck to you, and thanks again for your time.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys. Really appreciate it.
Kevin Cheveldayoff. We'll come back with more after this. Bob McCowan and John Shannon on the podcast and on Sirius XM 167. Thanks to Kevin Cheveldayoff for joining us once again. Evander Kane has had a most interesting last few months. He was accused of betting on hockey games. I don't know if he was accused actually of betting against his own team.
No, he was accused by his ex-wife of betting on hockey games.
And the National Hockey League, I guess, has exonerated him of that allegation, which I suppose it's true, but I mean, you have to understand I'm a little pessimistic. Hopefully you can understand. I don't know whether they would want to do that. And yet on the other hand,
hold on. Why would you be pessimistic?
Well, I think historically leagues, I mean, do you want to get into a Pete Rose situation? Now, no. Pete Rose bet on baseball games, but Pete Rose always said He never bet against the Cincinnati Reds.
Right.
Did he bet on the Cincinnati Reds? Probably. Did he bet against the Cincinnati Reds? He always said no. And yet the league never acknowledged that. They continued to imply that he may have. And I just think that leagues today are so self-aware and so self-protective. You know, it's no different than the National Football League cover up hundreds of positive steroid tests. Yeah, that story's been out there for more than a decade.
I mean, the attitude towards gambling, and I'm not suggesting that players should be allowed to gamble at all. They shouldn't be. But the fact now that gambling houses and betting websites are now business partners, does that change anything?
Well, it wouldn't have changed anything for me because I don't think there's a correlation between gambling and performance.
Okay.
And I've said this all along with regard to Pete Rose, and it's generically true in my mind. If you bet against your own team,
That's wrong.
And that opens up the possibility of something untoward going on. Mm-hmm. If you bet on your own team, like I'd almost rather you bet on your own team than bet on a game that's not even in your league. Because your motivation is going to be as high as it could possibly be. Every player has money on every game they play because they get paid based upon their performance in that game. Mm. If I bet on the ratings on this show,
you'd win every time.
Well, thank you very much. I would, but would somebody say that's untoward, unprofessional? I should be kicked off because I did that? I think quite the opposite. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I know it's a terrible example, but I really don't. I care only if you bet against your team. Anyway, Kane was exonerated from that, but now he's in shit for COVID protocol. I mean, the guy is a walking nightmare. Do they want to get him out of the game? Do they want to get rid of him? Is that what they're looking to do?
Well, and he's already there are levels of financial stress that he's under as well.
Well, he's bankrupt, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, the question I think for Doug Wilson in San Jose is what role do you see Kane on your team at any point? Now, the players have come out and said, listen, if he's in the dressing room, he's one of us and we're going to play. But that it's really put a pall in many ways on what's going on in San Jose. So Evander, you know, there's two thought processes. Evander, one process thought is that he can't get out of his own way. I mean, he screws up every time and he doubles down on it. The other one is that perhaps they're picking on him, Bob. Perhaps because he's had mistakes before, people are overzealous on what is right or wrong for Evander Kane. And I'm not close enough to it to know which way or the other it is.
Well, I'll buy that in a generic sense, but here is the truth. Evander Kane, I believe, is smarter than a post. And if you are, then you know that you make your living playing a game. And within that game, there are rules and regulations.
Sure.
We all live in that environment. And I mean, not just generic rules and regulations. I mean, can Evander Kane go to Vegas as a normal citizen and put down a boatload of money?
Absolutely.
On a
he should
sure
be he able
can.
To.
Sure he can. But as a high profile hockey player, that's not a good look. And you should know, he should know that. And
I'm
a lot
not
of
sure
the
things, he's cared about that though.
Well,
I'm
I don't think
sure
he does
cares.
Care about it, but he should care about it if he cares about his future. Because it's, you know, again, things have gotten a lot grayer in the last 9 months or so since the leagues got into bed with all this gambling stuff. And and their position on all this has changed and is changing out of necessity because these are now their partners.
And they need more transparency. You need transparency. You know, we're gonna have to make sure that the betting is fair and square, whether it's a prop bet or a game bet.
I'll tell you, John, I lived in Vegas for a number of years. They used to have these giant football helmet chairs at Caesar's Palace. And guys used to pay money to sit in those chairs on Sunday morning when the game started. Well, Sunday afternoon, Sunday morning in Vegas time.
Sure, yeah.
And the NFL made them take them out. The NFL made them take the nicknames of the teams off the board.
Yeah.
So it was no longer the Giants versus the Chargers. It was NYN for National Conference against San Diego, now LA.
Yeah.
They couldn't even put the nicknames up on the board. And they did it all because the league wasn't getting what they thought was a share of the revenue from gambling. Now they're in bed with all those casinos. Now you can put up whatever you want.
Well, and in fact, the Washington Capitals, Bob, the league, starting next season, everybody will have a 3-inch patch on their sweaters. The Washington Capitals will have a gambling site on their sweaters next year.
Don't be surprised if somewhere down the road, they don't have another patch somewhere that says, bet on me.
Actually, that's a good name. You know, that's a good name for our website. Maybe we should start a gambling website, bet on me.
Oh, yeah, that's what we need to do.
Yeah.
Somebody will suspend us. Oh, no, wait. We don't work for anybody.
Not anymore. Not anymore.
They can't do anything. We'll do whatever the hell we want then, won't we?
Absolutely. Haven't we always?
Well, within some reason, yes.
Which is why we're not working for anybody anymore.
Well, I don't mind it, to tell you the honest to God's truth.
Good point.
When you work for yourself, you know that you're not working for somebody that's dumber than you.
Yeah, well,
maybe as dumb, but not dumber.
When you're working for yourself, just don't have a fight with the boss. That's all.
That happens every day, for God's sakes. All right. We're going to bring them another show tomorrow?
Yeah, we will. Let's do another one tomorrow.
All right. We'll see.
What the heck?
Like my old football coach used to say, just keep running this play till you get it right. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, we'll see you next time. Goodbye, everybody.